Today I'm going to talk with Irish Paralympian Peter Ryan. Let's cue that intro.
The big question is this: how do we use cycling as a tool to improve our health, our happiness, and our longevity? That is the question, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Anthony Walsh, and welcome to the Roadman Podcast.
Roadman, welcome back to another Roadman Cycling Podcast. It's Wednesday. I'm getting back into the flow of things post-Columbia. My seat feels like my own again. And I've got my nice little tidy podcasting setup here. I got my sound dampening walls. I got my microphone on my nice stand. And I tell you, I miss those little comforts when I was away trying to podcast in Colombia. It makes a big difference for the amount of time it takes me to get out of podcast, just having everything set up and ready to rock. So I'm absolutely delighted to be home, if I'm not absolutely chuffed with the weather. It's rained every single day since I got home from Dublin so far. And I'm going to let you in a little secret. My bike is still nicely packed inside its bike box. I am going to get round this evening to building that bike and just braving it again, getting back outside. And it's just getting used to it. Once you get used to the weather, it's fine, but it's coming from 30 to 35 degrees. And now having to ride out in the rain, it takes a little bit of getting used to it, but we'll get there. Okay, folks, today's podcast, I'm really excited to bring you this one because it's with a good friend of mine, Peter Ryan. I'll tell you a brief story of how I met Peter, and it's 6-odd years ago at this stage, maybe a little less. A buddy of mine, a teammate, rang me up and said, "Hey, I'm supposed to go to Seville and do this cycle from Seville to Granada on the front of a tandem with a visually impaired guy, and I can't make it. Do you want to go?" And I was like, "No, of course I don't want to go cycling around Spain with a visually impaired guy. Firstly, I haven't ridden a tandem in years. Secondly, I've no idea who this guy is. Thirdly, I'm a miserable bastard at the best of times. So I definitely don't want to be like, you know, nearly a forced date on the bike for 7 days with a stranger." I'm like, "No thanks." And my buddy's like, "Honestly, he's a really good guy. I think you'll get on great with him." And he twisted my arm. He was persuasive. I turned up, long story short, met Peter Ryan in the airport, visually impaired, and we rode from Seville to Granada as part of a charity cycle. And since that day, we've been great buddies. And so I asked him to come on the podcast and talk about mental resilience, because when I think about mental resilience and fortitude, Peter springs to mind every single time. His story is just a brilliant, inspirational story. A very promising underage hurler who lost his eyesight, and then, as any young Irish lad does, he turns to drink to try and escape the reality he's now faced with. And he went down a dark hole of addiction until he managed to get himself together with the help of some really good people and broke free of the chains of addiction and started doing some really positive stuff with his life. And he's made such an impact on almost everyone around him, from raising huge amounts of money for people in Torlas. He's been elected a councillor in Torlas. He's also qualified for the last Olympics, and I've had the pleasure of riding the World Championships with him last January in Toronto. I was on the front of the Irish tandem, he was on the back. He's a stand-up guy, so I want to welcome him to the podcast. But before I do that, I just want to remind you about Patreon, because Patreon's how we fund this podcast. We're into 2021. The podcast, it's changing from something that was a little bit experimental to, "Oh, will a podcast work?" to, "We know this will work. We know you want to listen to the podcast." I can see from the download figures that everybody's enjoying it. It's growing week on week, which is great. Keep spreading that good word. But we also need to make this financially viable. You've got your Netflixes, your Amazons, your YouTube Plus subscriptions. You've got 10, 15 euro going to all these people, and they really don't care anytime you subscribe to their platform. But I'll tell you, I really do care. When you subscribe to our Patreon, when you decide to buy me that pint once a month to say thanks for the podcast, it really puts a smile on my face and it secures the future of this podcast. So please head on over to patreon.com/Anthony_Walsh. The link's in the bio. If you've been on the fence a bunch of times and you're listening to me saying this all the time, please do sign up for it now, because it really, really makes a difference. And for those who have signed up already, I'm much indebted to you. Thank you very much. And I'll continue to pour my heart and soul into this podcast. Today's interview, it's one I'm really, really excited to bring you, Peter Ryan. So I'm not going to push it off any longer. It's Peter Ryan.
Thank you very much, Anthony. Delighted to be here. And yeah, really like what you're doing.
You're going to talk to us about resilience today. And when I was going through, you know, the Roadman podcast has been such a cool platform to me that I can almost reach out to anyone and there's a fair chance they're going to come and say yes. And when I went looking through my Rolodex, my, you know, imaginary Rolodex, like, which is my Instagram friends, of who I should chat with about resilience, I'm like, I can't think of anyone better placed to talk about resilience.
Thank you kindly. Look, I suppose I've been moving in these circles, talking on the business side of things and executive coaching and using it in sports. And essentially they're tools that I've picked up through life. Like, and when I talk to people, I don't try to make it too much about science or like there's research to back up what I'm talking about, but there's a lot of lived experience in here. And I suppose I also come with the preface of saying, like, I don't have the monopoly on being right, but what I talk about I've used through my own life, and it's definitely helped me. And I suppose to your listeners that don't know, a bit of the backstory, like, I'm a Paralympic athlete. I'm legally blind. I had to face a lot of my own adversity, I suppose, at the age of 20, and just figuring out that. And it is a way of shaping you and a way of giving you perspective. I'm shy of saying I'm qualified to talk about it. I think we all are more than we realize, but it's definitely caused me to self-reflect, and I kind of know what's worked for me and what hasn't, and what I've been, and the things I'm trying to use now going forward on a more regular basis. So, like I said, thanks for having me.
Oh, Peter, delighted to have you. And I think a lot of our viewers on this summit, it's something they struggle with, because, you know, I'm sure some of you guys watching, you are pro athletes and resilience means something different to you. But for the vast majority of people watching this, resilience for them, it's I'm balancing work with family, with cycling, with trying to have some sort of social life and meaning myself. And at times it can feel like it's just all getting on top of us. And I know the people that have successfully navigated these waters, like yourself, it's not accidental. There is a lot of strategies behind the scenes used to create that resilience.
Without a doubt. Look, I have a few things that I use, like, borderline every day, and I'm definitely going to share them. There's three kind of pillars that are, and it's not, as you said, the thing we get stuck in our identity kind of piece, like, oh, this is a cycling podcast, so it's only about cycling. Like, fair beyond that, like, I'm only happy on the bike when I'm happy in my relationships, when, you know, I'm ringing my parents that bit more regular, when, you know, when the family buzz is going well, when I know I'm able to meet the rent at the end of the month. Like, we're more than just one thing. And I think we need to, like, just take that step back. And a lot of what I talk about is actually that self-awareness and self-regulation. So I suppose, like, if I was to kick into it for a moment, like, there's a couple of things I do want to kind of get across here. Like, so there's three pillars in this resilience piece that I kind of want everyone walking away with. And if they can walk away with those three tools or three questions, then I haven't done a bad day's work. We might talk for a little bit around growth versus a fixed mindset. That's something I think that also comes across every stratosphere of our life, and that can just add value and getting out of those comfort zones. And then I was saying, if we have time, we might do a little bit. It'd be more for the coaches that are on the show, or anyone in a leadership position, be it a boss at work, a manager, whatever the case may be. But anyone, I suppose, that's directing others, there's definitely a cool little piece in that as well. So I suppose, to hit you with the resilience stuff, and look, my backstory, like, two of us know each other well, you're absolutely sick to the teeth of hearing it, so I'm not going to get into the to's and fro's of losing the sight and hitting the bottle and all that side of things, but I'm sure it's out there if you want to direct people to some of the a more condensed version. But
yeah, I think we can link up the old podcast we done. I think it was a good solid 3-hour chat, so I'll try and link that somewhere down below this video or something.
Perfect. But, like, yeah, conscious people's times, we're all trying to consume content left, right and center, so it has to be just, I think, on point. And there's three staples of what I'm trying to get across here today. And so I suppose with that resilience piece and adversity, it's, like I said, I don't have the monopoly on this, and adversity, and I suppose we need to, that's part of it, getting ourselves away from that thing of thinking it only happens to me. So with this, I think like the three would be for me, self-awareness, self-regulation, and then there's an action piece in here as well, or I like to say control, influence, and accept. But when I talk about that self-awareness, like the one common thing I've come across, like, and I do, now that I've lived it, I like actually reading up on this stuff and learning where are the commonalities. And when I talk about the self-awareness, it is completely the fact that study after study has shown that resilient people actually realize shit happens. And that's me putting it at its most base level, but we realize that we're not this isolated being, the only one in the world with a problem. And that, like, and I reflect this across my own life. When I was at my lowest ebb, it was all because of this victim syndrome and thinking that I'm the only one with this problem and no one understands me and this, that, and the other. And it's not until you can take a step back and realize, like, do you know, if there was a natural audience here, something might be doing is I'd be getting them to stand up if you know someone with a physical or a mental disability. Stand up if you know someone that's had a divorce. Stand
do
up.
Do it.
If you
stand
know
up,
someone.
Folks. Stand up.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. And ultimately, yeah, exactly. And like when I'm talking, like I want people to think through their own lives because they will, they'll invariably stand up. We've all been hit with adversity in our lives, like we're all still able to tell the tale. So just that self-awareness to realize, like, it sounds so simple, and I'm not going to hit anyone with anything too complicated here today. Being able to realize shit happens to everyone, and there is not a house in this country that some bit of adversity isn't coming in the door of, and you're going to be more defined by how you respond to it than the actual thing itself.
But you know, on the self-awareness piece as well, I find that I've had periods in my life where I'm almost running downhill, where everything's going brilliant, and adversity will come along. You don't need to manufacture adversity. You don't need to, in those periods when you're running downhill and everything's going great, you don't need to have a guilt complex around it saying like things are going great for me, because they won't always go great. You'll hit that speed bump, and then this resilience piece just becomes so, so important. But it doesn't need to be a manufactured adversity when things are going great for you.
No, 100%. And we're too flippant. And that's actually, it's funny you hit on that, because like when I'd be going into the point number two around self-regulation and that side of it, like where it seems like the only thing that sticks is the bad news, and that we're not, like say when we talk, I've heard you on your podcast talking about gratitude and journaling and different things, but like we're far too quick to acknowledge the bad stuff that's happened in us. And it's been proven, like this is a big piece in positive psychology, where like psychology and counseling were born out of, like if you think of your life like a spectrum, like, and you have zero and then you have the minus numbers, like it's when people are struggling with their mental health and they're gone into the minus numbers, be it depression, be it whatever, like, and that was born to get them back to zero, getting back centered. But like, why should that be good enough? Why can't we actually try and push on and be happy for what we do have? And I just think there's fair, it's because like you said, we don't acknowledge the good. Like, so I, like in that self-regulation piece, I use control, influence, and accept. And when you say the word accept, people assume you're talking about negativity, or for me, you're talking about losing the sight. Or
what do you mean about control, influence, and accept?
So like, if you were to talk about like any problem that we have, like, or any situation we face, like invariably it can go into these three buckets. Like say I take my own, we're talking about adversity here today, so my own challenge of losing the sight. Like, there's a control, there's an influence, and there's an accept piece here. Now, in the control, I had absolute zero to do with getting the condition. And yet so much of my unhappiness was spent trying to actually influence something I had no influence whatsoever. We can look for whys where they don't exist. We can delve into that. It's knowing, that's the self-regulation piece. It's knowing where to concentrate your efforts. Like, essentially, like, how long can I give wondering why me, why this, why that, why the other? And yet, nothing good will come of this. So there's influence and there's accept. And, like, the influence I have is, right, I didn't pick those cards. But they're the ones that got dealt at me. Now what are you going to do? And there has to be a move on piece. And that's, it sounds trite to say it, but like I'm coming at it with, in my own opinion, like I had a pretty severe problem in front of me. There's people that get paralyzed by their problem and you know, they can be flippant. Like it's all like, obviously it's relevant and it's what hits you and you know.
But you touched it there and you used the word relevant. It's so relevant to almost every one of us watching this, because whether that adversity is I'm stressed at work, or you're going through a relationship breakup, or it's something more severe, like you're talking about, like a health concern, like for you or family members. It's just understanding that there's buckets of stuff you can control and there's buckets of stuff you can't control. And if you spend your whole life focusing on those buckets you can't control, it's not going to lead to a happy place.
No, and it was actually like, you know, we have a good relationship, and it was so, like you said it to me before, actually, and it was really profound. It was like, stressing about it doesn't mean you care any less. And like, that's exactly what I was doing. You spend all these times delving into the place where you've no control, you've no influence. And all it is like, it's victimizing again. So we move into the influence territory, and what can I do? Like, and in my story, it was like, well, I can start trying to challenge some of the things all these misnomers that I led myself to believe. I can see what being visually impaired actually means, because all I was doing was I had no acceptance. So I was running back into this, what my old life was. I like to tell people comparison is the thief of joy. And we do this so often, like we're comparing to something that we have no say in. So like, concentrate your efforts in that influence space. What can you do with this situation? And you'll be surprised where it takes you. And you accept, and this is actually akin back to what you said at the start of this talk, but like, acceptance for me, it doesn't always have to be, we delve into the negative all the time. Like, why can't we accept the good things that are happening to us? Like we're far too flippant to ignore the good things. Like, whereas the bad just sticks to us all the time, and that's all we're looking at, and we blame it for everything else that happens in our life.
There's a great quote. I'm not sure if you know the Serenity Prayer, and it's,
yeah,
God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
And that's it, case in mind, exactly. Like, that's, it's like, I don't know, have you a background in the AA as well, Anto? But that's a go-to one for them as well. And it's so true. Like, so they're the, like, this is point number two that I'm after kind of making three pieces out of, that control, influence, and accept. And this one is brilliant, the last piece, like, and it's just a question that we can ask across everything we do. But it's as simple as this: is what I'm doing helping me or hurting me for what I'm trying to do? And like, that transcends absolutely so many aspects of our life, like, be it on the bike and the decisions we're making off the bike, as you well know, like, you're in the coaching space, and that's exactly something that can, but it plays into our mindset. It plays into our positivity, and it's such a good way to regulate ourselves, whether we're unhappy, whether we're having a bottle of beer, whether we're doing whatever. Like, if we can ask that question before, because you're well read as a well know as well, and you're, say, Man Search for Meaning, that famous quote from it, the space in between stimulus and action is our one true freedom. And that's a quote I carry around with me all the time. Like, it's like the space in between stimulus and action. And it's knowing that our thoughts aren't our feelings. Like, thoughts turn to feelings, but like, we're not a victim of them. We're not bound like a robot that one equals the other. Like, we have that moment where we get to step away from it. And it's like, well, is what I'm doing here going to help me in the long run? And it can be a really, really powerful question to ask yourself.
It's something that I've done that for years, and I was only riding with a client today and I spoke to him about this. I'm not read on this area, but I call it the binary filter. And I said to him, like, your answer to this question is yes or no. And every action that you have, is this making it more likely or less likely that I'm going to hit my goals? It's one of the two buckets. You know, you're going out drinking with your friends. Is this more likely or less likely you're going to hit your target? The food you're eating, the errors you're sleeping, the relationships
you have. This is obviously cycling oriented, and we're talking about goals. Like, you can use that filter if you're going through a breakup, if you've just been made redundant, if you're, do you know, like, it's like, should I be flicking on Instagram right now and look, you know, creeping on someone? Should I be doing?
You probably shouldn't.
Like, honestly, no, as a rule of thumb. you don't need a podcast to tell you that, but that's what I mean. Like, but picking, just taking that question and pulling it across so many aspects of your life. You can filter out the shit, and the advice, we all know, like, the advice we give to a friend is sometimes harder for ourselves, but at the same time, that's a really strong tool. So there are three: self-awareness, self-regulation, and then that binary question, as you poetically put it, I think it's a nicer way than I have at my disposal. So there you go. There are three pieces on resilience. And the one thing, there are three tools on resilience, but the one thing I would like to tell people is, like, and it was a question I got put to me at a corporate talk there lately, but it was like, is this something that basically you think you have, and or was it born, or all this kind of stuff? And it's like, not a hope in hell, like, because I had to get to a very low ebb to start figuring my shit out. The reason I do the talks is that people, like, you don't have to, like, we were talking about the relevancy of problems, like, rock bottom, it's actually an honor saying in the AA as well, but, like, you hit rock bottom when you stop digging. So, like, you don't have to get to, you know, your back against the wall. You can start making change anytime once you decide to make it, and that's the piece I want to kind of leave people with. It's not this innate thing that some people have and other people don't, and we need to challenge that and actually, you know, be good to ourselves, for want of any better term, and, you know, just want
the best. You spoke at the outset between a fixed and a growth mindset, and I think that's an important point, because if you come to this discussion and you say, I'm not resilient, and you label yourself not resilient, you've all of a sudden, you've closed yourself to the possibility of realizing that this isn't a trait that you have. This is a set of skills you learn. But closing yourself off to it makes it impossible to acquire it.
That 100% is, and that's actually the way the cycle of the fixed versus growth mindset works. Like the belief piece is the top, and it's cyclical. Like, so belief leads to action, which in turn actually leads to, you know, you getting better, and then you're back to believing that you're better. And I suppose the quick way we can, again, we call it like a growth mindset, right? But I prefer to actually say mind state, because, like, it's fluid. There are things we're good at. There's things we're bad at. Sometimes I think it gets mixed up in fluff, because people swallow it to believe that we're trying to say you can be brilliant at everything. It's not what it's saying. It's saying that with a growth mindset, you can be better at everything. And case in point, think of anything that you can do right now, be it the fact that we're on Zoom and I'm visually impaired. There was a time when I couldn't use a laptop because I'm visually impaired. And ergo, you have to try. And ergo, you try again. And before you know it, I can do it. Like, there's grandmothers that are using iPhones. Mine doesn't, because she has a fixed mindset saying, I can't do that. But it's not like granny doesn't have the iPhone gene. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's realizing that it takes a few attempts, make a fool of yourself, but you can actually get better. It doesn't mean you're going to be the most proficient IT dude in the world. It means you can grow at anything. And it's, what is it, neuroplasticity or whatever it's called. But, like, you, it's based in science. Like, we can get better at anything.
And one of the other speakers, Ed Veal, on the summit, and we were talking about racer's mentality. And I'm sure you know it as well. If you think of two different athletes, I had two in my mind when I was having this conversation with them. One, they're both physiologically very similar, but I can identify something in them where I know one guy's a killer, one guy's not a killer. One guy is gonna, you know, prance around. He wants to call himself a cyclist and he'll go so far, but the other guy's a killer. He's showing up to win. And it's what makes that. And me and Ed were chatting about this, and Ed is a killer. Like, he's one of the best crit guys in North America for the last 10 years. And it's a super competitive scene with a lot of the best athletes in the world out there. And Ed shows up and he's a killer. He peacocks around, he struts, but it didn't start like that. And when you listen to the story, that this is a learned skill. So if you're listening to it now and you're like, I'm not cut out for bike racing, or I'm not cut out for this, the people you see, you see the finished product. You never see the races that Ed went home early, the, you know, the really dark moments he has in the car on the way home, questioning, is this for me? Am I good enough for this sport? And you don't see that. We only see the muscle-bound guy with the hands in the air flexing on a podium.
100%. And I think a lot of that is actually based in kind of cognitive behavioral stuff, where we see a behavior, but we can't actually know what someone's thinking or what someone's feeling, or, you know, they might have imposter syndrome. And like social media, case in point, like the amount of people that are always projecting this best work, and that has a reflective piece where we feel shit because we assume our lives are supposed to be like that. Or to bring it back to the cycling, like I said, you're coming in seeing it, and I've seen it, and he is the specimen that you describe, and that can be daunting. But like, he is driven, and he created that. And you know, no one walks in the finished article. I just think it's that ratio between talent, and like, it's actually grit becomes a bigger factor when you delve into that space. Like, you go to the top of any sport or the top of any aspect of life, like, and I think the differential in the talent starts becoming more minimal. Like, it's all those extra percents, and the mindset, I think, is the big one. Like, it's who wants it more at the end of the day. And like I said, I'm very much from the school of that's a learned thing. Like, and you learn that by actually the down days. You learn that by the heavy defeats. You learn that by capturing that shit feeling when you're on the bus on the way home or on a plane on the way home saying, no, not for me. And some people are too afraid to use negativity as an energy source. But like, we all kind of seen in The Last Dance, we've seen one of the best players in the world actually used a chip on the shoulder and grit to become what he was. Like, and half the time he was like, you know, creating the narrative himself. But these are the things that define you, whether you get on the court. And it could be a pretend grudge, but we walk off and we shake hands afterwards. But if that's what you need to get yourself into that place, I think too many, I know we've kind of delved into something here different, but I think too many people are afraid to use that bit of anger or that bit of negativity and, you know, poke the bear or whatever you want to call it. Like, but that's a healthy thing in sport.
One of my most powerful resilience tools that I have, it's how I see myself. And so I see myself as a bike rider. So when I have a bad week, when I have a bad race, when I have even a bad season or a bad couple of seasons, I don't interpret that as, I'm not going to make it in this sport, I'm not cut out for this. I interpret it as, I've had a bad week, I'm having a bad season, but I'm still a bike rider. It's my identity. It's how I see myself. I'm a bike rider. I belong at the front of bike races. And other events can go on, and you could interpret those events as, you know, this is my signal that I should quit, that I'm not cut out for this world, that it's too cutthroat, that it's too hard. Or you can interpret it as, I'm not having a good day, let's just come back again tomorrow. Because it's so hard to beat the guy who just keeps coming back.
You've actually hit on a lot there, but like, one being, we're back to our self-regulation and who are we? And, you know, and like, take a shit moment can just be a shit moment. It's not a reflection of you. And the other piece, when we're talking about, we're in this belief space and fix versus growth, but we see what we want to see. And unless we believe, do you know what I mean? And visualization is such a strong part of any of this psychology stuff. I know boxers that when they're injured, they're actually working on combinations literally with the eyes closed. And it's been proven to actually help performance when you go back. Like, so like, if you can't see it yourself, then you need to be asking more questions. Like, and that bravado, that forces the issue. It is self-fulfilling, literally all these things, but it starts off with just believe it yourself. And actually that last piece we want to talk about, it's almost like that Pygmalion effect. And I don't want to go onto it just yet, but that's almost your coach has to see it for you. It has to be a dynamic led by you, where you want this thing. So I think you've touched on a lot there.
Tell us about this Pygmalion effect.
This is cool, and I enjoy this. I came across it just doing some reading for a talk before. I think it's like I was saying, like, where is this applicable? Like, because I was just enjoying reading it, but I think it's really useful for coaches if you have on this call or on the summit. But Pygmalion effect, essentially, it was founded by a guy, David Rosenthal, back in the late 60s in America. He was doing a study, and he wanted to see how interaction affected behaviors. So long story long, because I guess that's the geek here, but he labeled two sets of rats. Okay, so he had them in a cage. It was science, college, university experiment. He labeled one set smart rats, the other ones dumb rats, right? Students came in. Essentially, at the end of the week, there was going to be a race through a maze from both sets of rats. And he actually gave these smart rats a backstory and everything. He said they were bred in Harvard, they were this, they were that, they were the other, right? You can see where this is going. Anyways, at the end of the week, and genuinely, this is, you can look this up, but I'll send you on details about it if you want to put it up to your summit friends. But essentially, at the end of the week, the smart rats won the race. Now, the big thing obviously here is rats can't read. Rats were not aware who the smart and who they were. So, but he realized it was the attention they were getting by their mentors, that the students, in effect, their behavior was, because we labeled the athletes, we're going to call the rats the athletes in this case, because we gave them a label, it was like their potential was already unveiled. So anyways, he did up his report, and this is all scientifically based, but he kind of had a line at the end of it saying, if this was true for rats, I wonder what's possible with students. And there was a principal in a school in California read this and said, I want you to come to my school and perform whatever test you need to do. So he went, and it was under the radar. No one knew that this was under the guise of an experiment. He came with this storyline that he's like, I've actually created an algorithm to find bloomers. So they're like, what? This, that, and the other. And he did a standardized test, and basically came back to the teachers, and he marked off 20 of these bloomers. And I said, now, these are not the highest IQs right now, but I can assure you, these are your bloomers. So with that, everyone went off happy, blah, blah, blah. It was over a 2-month period. And hey presto, the bloomers results went up by 22%, whereas the rest of the class on average was 11. And they were like, oh my God, how did you do this? How did you blah, blah, blah? And that's the point where he told them this was all bullshit. He's like, this was just a made up exam. I told you who, I just randomly picked 20 students out of a pile. But the moral being, like, as soon as the coach / teacher was told that this kid was a bloomer, this kid wasn't, this, as soon as the teacher seen the potential in someone, it changed their behaviors, and it changed probably the level of help that they gave, and it changed the limiting ceiling that we put on people. And it just became this, like it absolutely blew my mind. I don't know what you think about it, but otherwise I'm after wasting about 5 minutes of your time. But it was just this whole thing for like, why are we capping where we could go, who we could be? And it's not this fucking fandangled belief that we can be everything and more, but it's that we can be better. And like, your coaching guys every day of the week, like your sportive guy can be an A4 if he wants to be, your A4 can be an A3, A2, A whatever. But it's the fact that we have to stop putting a ceiling on the guys we're coaching. The athletes themselves have to stop saying, oh, I'm only, my threshold is only, I can only reach. We kind of, you know yourself, like you, I'm sure, have what your best day ever number is. And have you ever even visualized looking past it? Probably not. Like I think sometimes we cap ourselves.
I think I done it in training the other day.
Well,
I think I broke it in training the other day.
Yeah, well, you're you're talking to the best minds in the game for the last 3 weeks. Like, you know, if you can't do it, no one can. But this is in essence what I'm trying to say. Like, as coaches, as leaders, and this is a bit that transcends whether you're a boss at work, whatever you're doing, like, just, you know, stop putting these limiting beliefs on the people we're trying to actually help grow.
I definitely have firsthand experience of this. And it's what I take out of that is it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you think you are predestined or preordained to be a cycling Tour de France winner, you're going to end up developing a set of habits that get you there. So even though there's no preordaining of Tour de France winners, because you've decided in your head, that's my destiny, I'm going to win a Tour de France, now you open yourself to certain opportunities and you take certain actions that are aligned with this new imagined goal in your head. But I definitely had it as a kid. And I remember
the film Good Will Hunting. And if anyone hasn't seen it, or you haven't seen it, one of the premises, there's this super genius guy and he's working on a building site. And I remember early, I was like a bit of a messer in school, but it was quite academic. And I remember early a teacher saying to me, "You remind me of a Good Will Hunting. You just want to fuck around and play with the lads all day, but you've got super academic potential." But that actually became a self-fulfilling prophecy, where I would be coming up close to exams and I would think, no, I've got this genius switch. I can flick it on. Now, in reality, I never had a genius switch. What I had was a fear to step away from that identity that someone had given me as a kid. And because of it, a fear to not be that guy anymore, because that guy doesn't get D's on tests. That guy doesn't fail first year of college. Because I had that identity, in the week leading up to a test, I just turned into an absolute Jedi Knight and I pulled like 18-hour study days back to back to back to back to back. And it was that hard work and that grunt that got me the results, not this like preordaining by a teacher back when I was 15 years old.
It's something to live up to. You had, there was kind of risk to reward there as well, I'm sure, and, you know, accountability. But this, just capping ourselves, it doesn't avail anyone. And I actually like the fact that you said you wanted to be a pro tour writer or a Tour de France writer, and then everything else aligns with that. Because I think as soon as we attribute a number to a thing, I think we do it in gym work, we do it in, you know, on the watt bike. It's like, it's all numbers, numbers, numbers. But like, it should be, yeah, use them as incremental goal setting, but don't necessarily put that ceiling on yourself. Like, see where it can be. Like, if you change all the actions around it, like, it's back to that why not mentality. I think if you can kind of keep curious, keep saying, how can I get better? How can I do this? Like, it's like someone called it before. Like, it's like everything you're doing, you're trying to be a jungle tiger all the time. Like, you're trying to just stay out of that comfort zone all the time. Like, whatever decision you make, like, and even if it is asking questions, because it's easier to not ask your coach questions. It's easier to just do the mundane and train. And but like, it's like, how can I push the dial, and just see where you go?
And this is what I'm trying to get into athletes all the time. I don't think there's an athlete in our roster of athletes that can't win a Cat 1 race. That's not to say they're all even racers, but I just think there's the gap, the magic, the X factor, the je ne sais quoi, whatever you call it. That's when you're at the difference between winning a World Tour, Tour de France stage, and coming toward. There's an X factor, there's talent, the difference between Sagan and Bennett. All of us down the bottom, like when we're at, I talked about this in one of the other interviews, when you think you're at 100%, you're not. You're at 60% max. You can go a lot deeper. And in that, I refer to it in a race-specific context, but I'm talking more on a macro level now, like in terms of removing that regulator or the limiter and what you think is possible, where you think the ceiling of achievement is, because it's way higher than where you think.
Well, it's one thing sometimes we, and it is about having that honest relationship with your coach or whatever. Like, sometimes are the goals we're setting, are they our goals? Like, whose should is that? Like, is it like sometimes you have these conversations, I'm saying what I feel you think I should say, if that makes any sense. Maybe you've ended up in coaching dynamics where it's like, is it, and it's fine, and does the goal align with your values? And like, because if it is what the athlete wants to do, well, then it's my goal. Do you know what I mean? It's not, and there's no amount of help you can give the athlete that will actually make him go back to our question of, is this going to help me? Is this going to hinder me? And it's akin in that to every decision you make. So, and I honestly, I don't think you'll ask that question unless the goal is what you truly want. Unless that, because like you said, like the levels we're racing at, we're moving around in, like, it's not a divine right. The guys that are winning are putting in the hours. And like, the substitute for hard work is pretty limited at the cycling game. So it's the equation is small, do you know?
Peter, how do we wrap up your sort of teachings on resilience into somebody that's watching this now and they're thinking, oh, like, I'm a little bit fragile. I need this resilience that he's talking about. What are my actionable steps? How do I become anti-fragile? That's a great book if anyone hasn't read it, Anti-Fragile. But how do you become anti-fragile? What are your kind of action points for someone that you'd like them to take away from this chat?
Jesus, Anto, you're hitting me with the hard questions. Like, anti-fragile, I go back to, like, what are we calling the fragility of the... So what is causing them to stop? Like two things stop people, right? It's fear and the stories we tell ourselves. We touched on this, like, but create our own stories. We are architects, like, and it's something I always say in the talks as well. It's like, but you can't steer a parked car. You have to actually, like, why not try? And question, and back to the limiting beliefs, like, challenge the stories we're telling ourselves. Like, we can't truly say that we're trying. And it's that whole self-honesty piece, all right? Try something new and see if it makes a difference. So, like, I know for me, like, I'm living in this cool little world, and we talk about being fragile, being whatever. Maybe this is a better analogy for it, but, like, my life 7-8 years ago, as you well know, ended up in a treatment center, rock bottom, all these kind of things. Now, multiple national titles, seen the world, in training for Tokyo, doing all these cool things, this, that, and the other. My condition hasn't changed one bit. My mindset changed. Okay, so if we can ask people to go back to the start of the talk, maybe take those three pieces for resilience, that self-awareness, self-regulation, and ask the questions. And after that, we have to just put some action into place. Like, we can't pamper the subject. Do you know what I mean? I'm the biggest advocate for mental health in the world, but we really need to just challenge what we think. And sometimes there isn't a why. We just have to get on with it.
I think that point, to wrap it up and finish on it, that you made on story, is so, so powerful. When I chat to clients with limiting beliefs, when you dig deep into it, it's always the story they have playing in their head as to why they can't do it. I was even talking to someone the other day, and he was on the fence about coming on. Should he start with coaching or not? And he's been training away on Zwift, and because he had a story in his head that coaching was for pro athletes, that he couldn't get any better with coaching. So I gave him an example of another client that was hesitant, and the other client that was hesitant came on. He said a Strava time that he's had on the local climb here in Holt. He's had that time for about 5 years. He's never beat the time. He's been close to it a few times. And he came on, and within 8 weeks of stepping away from Zwift, moving on to a structure training plan, he'd taken a minute off his 10-minute time going up there. But as soon as I told this story to the client that was thinking about coming on board, all of a sudden now we had a new story that trumped his story, and it gave him permission to come on and try to coach him, because he's like, it worked for him. He's similar to me. It worked for him. Why can't it work for me? And we see those self-defeating stories, the narratives that are going in our head all the time.
We have to just challenge them. And that's as simple as that. Like, it's push the boat out. It's easy to tell people to get out of the comfort zone. I know that, right? If it was, why isn't everyone doing it? But it goes back to the stories we tell ourselves. And why not investigate those stories? And not just thinking jagged. Negative thought tends to come in like one sentences, like, you can't do that. You're shit at this. You'll never be able to do that. You're naturally maths. You're naturally this. Challenge the shit out of those things. All right. Investigate it and see what happens. So
folks, you heard it from Peter Ryan. Press pause, figure out what you can change, what you need to accept. Start telling yourself a different story.
CIA, my man.
Peter, if people want to delve a bit further, or if they're interested in getting you into the club or the business to talk about this type of stuff, is that something you offer, or is that something you do, or where can they go and follow your journey?
Yeah, 100%. Like, the website is peterryan.ie. You'll be able to find contact details there and see. I do a bit of executive coaching, doing the corporate speaking, and yeah, more so look in the wellness and leadership space are two of my main topics. Like, that's where I think I'm creating a bit of impact. It's where I'm in my happy place when I'm talking with that, and just bouncing off of people in like this in a more interactive setting. And yeah, if I can stay doing it, I'll be happy for a long time.
People have called him the Tony Robbins of Torless. Peter, thanks for joining me.
No bother at all. Cheers, anytime.
Before you go anywhere, our first ever Roadman Summit, it aired back in December. I brought together 30 experts, and they shared with me their secrets on how to biohack your physiology, how to melt away body fat and smash your cycling goals, whatever that was.
Since airing that back in December, I've just been inundated my Instagram DMs, Twitter direct messages with requests to get access to this material. I had it locked up in the vault, but I've decided to open access to this material for you, the podcast listeners of the Roadman Podcast. So to get access to this, it's a one-time payment of €47, and you're going to have all the interviews, all those secrets forever. You're going to have the videos and the MP3s. In there, I've got interviews with world tour mechanics, nutritionists, sports psychologists, bike fit experts, and some of the legends of the sport like Tyler Hamilton and Pete Stettner. Over 30 hours of content in this members area that I've created for you guys. So if you want to get access to that, the way to do it, it's to head on over to this URL, www.roadmansummit.com/2021. I'll give you that again. It's www.roadmansummit.com/2021. That's numerical. The link to that is in the bio. Get it, check it out, learn it, take it in, because this is sure to set you on the right path for 2021.